Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, and good afternoon, Jen.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I have announcements to get us started here.
Okay, great.
A four-week at-home yoga for Africa series starting May 17th will offer gentle yoga grounded in awareness practice. A new virtual 20-minute practice available each week, downloaded at any time for the practitioner's convenience. The offering is by donation, and all proceeds benefit Living Compassion in Cantaloma.
And that is coming right up. So that's we better hop on it to sign up for that.
Yes, indeed. And if you have a question or concern you believe just cannot be raised in our practice, then we have a workshop for you. Our Really No Taboos workshop on Sunday, May 26th, will offer an opportunity to talk to the guide about whatever the voices have convinced you cannot be addressed by your awareness practice.
I mean, that is a do not miss it moment, huh?
The floodgates are going to be let loose, huh?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. How extraordinary, because, I mean, I'm sure there's all kinds of content that people would plug in there, but for each of us to look at that as the process that, I mean, because, you know, it can feel like, no, I mean, you know, I look at everything except this one little thing. But there's no such thing as one little thing, because whatever that process is, that's going to be a process that has us in many places in our lives. So that's really
Yeah. And I'm guessing each of us has our own little process that we could fit in there.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's great. Exciting.
Yes. And Summer of Sangha is starting soon. Our spiritual home at 4 Acres Zen Center in gorgeous Squim, Washington, will host week-long and weekend retreats in July and August, offering yoga, meditation, guidance, and workshops. In addition, it will be possible to accept the precepts with this practice during the summer offerings. Only a few slots are left, so sign up right away.
Can't wait for that. Yeah. We were outside on this gorgeous day getting ready just today.
Oh, beautiful. Yeah. Lovely. Sounds great. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders, if you'd like to talk with Jen tonight, please press *6 and then 1 to make a show. And a conversation on one topic in about 5 minutes in length is great. And I think that gets us all ready here, Jen.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Hello.
Who's that? Hi, this is Dixie.
Oh, hey, Dixie.
I'm surprised I got on. I'm shocked.
Yay. What are you seeing?
Oh, I've been looking at mainly this judgment, criticism of my husband, largely, and trying different things. It's just a thousand little things with being messy and messing up things and using my new towels on dog poo. And I think the voices say I would be happier if I didn't, just to avoid him, which, you know, that doesn't really work either.
Yeah, that brings its own set of things.
But I also don't know how. I've realized that I am a visual person, and I really love things that are in as new condition as possible. I really like to take care of things. I like my car to be clean.
Mm-hmm.
I like him to wear nice clothes, especially when we go out.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, sometimes the talk in my head is it's really none of my business. But, you know, I try to look at why that's important other than I just enjoy it. I don't know that I'll really feel like
mm-hmm.
anybody else notices or cares or judges him.
And so it's not just that you want to look a certain way when you go out, that you want him to look a certain way as well.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so if we looked at something like the towels, so you realize that you really like things to, you like when they look new and fresh and clean, and you love to care for things. And so you've got, say, new towels, we'll take that example, and then out they come to clean up after the dogs. Yikes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And do you have a sense, Dixie, of what, so that happens, and then there's criticism of him. That's, you started out by saying you're looking at criticism, especially of your husband. And what's your experience of that? So when that happens, so the dog towels come out, the new towels have come out to clean up after the dogs, and your experience of that is?
Well, you know, it's not like I haven't sewed him 20 times where the old towels are already used for things like that.
Uh-huh. So frustration, would you say?
Yeah, or disrespect, maybe. You know, I spent my money on these things.
So you feel destroyed. Disrespect. Like, uh-huh.
I guess frustration.
Uh-huh. And like, gosh, you've told him a million times, you spent your money on these towels. There's a sense of feeling disrespected. Like, why can't you take in that information that I give you about these towels?
Yeah, and you know, he damaged my car, and then it takes him a year to get it fixed, and then when he gets it fixed, then he drives it again, and he does the same thing. He runs up on the curb and breaks the bumper, and he's just really accident prone. And then I just go, you know, he's not going to change. He's going to be him. So why do I mean, it's, I wish I just didn't, I wasn't so discerning to see those things. I just can't not see them.
Yeah, and that's the hard part, isn't it, in a situation like you're describing. So you have certain reactions and the realization that you have no control over what goes on with him, how he, you know, which towels he's going to reach for, how he is with, you know, your things, that sort of thing. And so you're left with, okay, so this is what we've got. You know, you are in this relationship with him. You share much of your life with him. And it sounds like that's not changing. And so it sounds like what you're looking at is, okay, what's an approach to this that I wouldn't have to suffer, be required to suffer in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of what you're looking at?
Yeah, that would be nice.
Uh-huh.
It's just hard to accept all the things that are messed up and destroyed. And I have discovered that he doesn't care what things look like as long as they function. So if he has a T-shirt that has holes and paint all over it, you know, he'll go to a fine dining restaurant and it doesn't matter to him.
It's still clothes.
You know,
it's doing the job that it needs to do, right?
They work just fine.
Yeah. Right. So you realize he's living in a whole different universe than you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, Dixie, when it comes up, are you allowed to, I know you've done recording and listening, so you know, the two-handed recording is the sort of the obvious form of it. But are you allowed to have the experience that you have? Because you've said things like, well, I know he's not going to change. And, you know, you started out by saying, I'm looking at how critical I am of him. But when it happens, you know, the car gets wrecked or the, you know, and it doesn't get fixed and the dog towel, the towels get used for the dog. Are you allowed to have whatever experience you have of that? Is that reaction allowed to move through?
Well, is there judgment from ego?
Another way to ask it, Dixie, would be how do you practice with that when it happens?
I think I've tried a variety of things of just trying not to make it important to me or being frustrated and then letting it go. Can't change what happened.
Right, which is interesting, right? Because trying to not make it important to me, that's kind of tricky. There's a way in which we have no more, quote, control over that necessarily than we do over someone else's behavior, right? I don't know if you've been in the context lately. Sherry's mentioned the when she was growing up that there was a little thing that her mother had on the inside of one of their cabinets in the kitchen that said, do not despair, that you can't make other people how you wish them to be, or you can't make yourself how you wish to be. And so it just strikes me that, you know, and you said a few minutes ago, you know, acceptance, you just wish you could accept. It's really hard to accept it. And it is. And I know for me, often in a situation like you're describing, one of the things that I've really seen that's made a huge difference is if there's the clarity to see what piece is in front of me right now to accept, that can be extraordinarily helpful. Because I would project accepting that that's how he is and that's sort of down the road, that what's going on right now is you're having a reaction. And what if it was all right for you to have that reaction to that going on? What if that was okay? What if that was the place that you got to practice right now and it didn't get slapped with a label of, God, you're so critical of him and why are you critical of him and why do you keep being, you know, can't you let that go? And that, all right, here's this reaction. And again, going to the two-handed recording, one of the things that's so beautiful about that tool is so you put the recorder in the right hand and you let the person who's having that experience talk about that experience in an uncensored way. So not like, well, I mean, I can't change him. It's not any, but just whatever, how does that feel to her? I feel disrespected that he won't. I mean, I spent good money on those towels. You know, whatever it is that she wants to say about that. And then you get to put the recorder in the left hand. You know, take a breath, pause, put the recorder in the left hand, listen back, and really listen to her. So not only does that experience get to be put out there in an uncensored way, it also gets listened back to in a completely open, unconditional way. And then you get to just see if there's any response, you know, that life might drop in to offer her in that situation.
Yeah, I think I've done that, and it was just kind of, I know this is really frustrating for you, and sorry this keeps happening, and validation, you know, for how I am, you know, wanting things to look nice, and enjoying, really loving that.
And are you allowed to take that in? Because that seems huge, right? The, gosh, I can see how hard that is for you. I'm sorry that this is so frustrating.
Yeah.
And, you know, Dixie, I mean, at least this is my experience. The truth of it is, we each have our thing that goes round and round and round and round.
You know what? I found a recording from, I think, 2010 at the monastery thing that I said, I noticed that I was being really critical of my husband. At that point, we had just been married for 4 years. So 14 years later, I'm still doing it.
Yeah, well, I think we could pretty much all say I'm still doing it when it comes to these core, especially something like with another human being living at close quarters. I mean, there's nothing like that to bring up, you know, everything we've got going.
And I think that's a big part of it, too, is that we're both retired now and we're both at home a lot, and there's just much more opportunities for him to mess things up than there used to be when we were working and doing things after work and kind of just coming home and going to bed and getting up and going to work.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, tons of compassion, tons of patience, and this is your workshop, you know. If, as awareness practitioners, you know, what we want, it's hard to remember that sometimes, but what we want is for all those edges to get brought up, because our opportunity is to embrace them in unconditional love and acceptance over and over and over and over and over. And as far as I can tell, that's what's required, over and over. It just gets worn away little by little by little. And the thing that I've been looking at a lot in my own practice lately is, what if that was just fine? What if that was completely all right? So you didn't need to expect that, you know, okay, well, if I was really practicing well, then tomorrow I probably won't be irritated when he blah, blah, blah. Well, maybe yes, maybe no. And if I am, that's all right. I don't expect that that isn't going to happen. If you can remember it, each one of those is the opportunity of, okay, this is my opportunity to practice unconditional love and acceptance. And it doesn't have to feel any certain way. You know, there might be all the sensations in your body that you're used to calling frustration. That's okay. That can be fine. You can love her anyway with all of those sensations going on.
Yeah. It would just be so much easier if he would be the way I wanted it to be.
Exactly. Well, and you know, Dixie, I'll bet you can look at other situations in your life over the years where this probably isn't the first time you've had this experience with someone, I'm guessing. Right? And so that sense that it does, it feels like, it feels so real. If that person would just, whatever it is. And, you know, having practiced as long as you've practiced, the intuition is, yeah, that's probably true. I mean, if he were to suddenly all, you know, he saw, oh my gosh, Dixie, I see exactly what you mean. I can't believe I've been like that all these years. I'm going to completely change. And it would, for whatever length of time, it would be a huge release. You would be ecstatic. And then that whole process would shift to something else eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? So it's like, okay, well, might as well practice with it in this way. Because this is what I've got.
I have made some progress. He has two dogs that bark a lot, and I sit outside for meditation, and they'll be barking at the squirrels, and I just get really irritated with them. And then I've been able to just, well, they're just dogs, and there's a squirrel, and it's going to happen, and I've been able to not focus on it, you know, to shift my attention to what I'm doing.
Yes.
That feels like something that I really have no control over. And I know I don't have control over him, but it feels like
the dogs and the squirrels.
That could change. That could change. The things he's doing could change, but the dogs are not going to change.
Yeah. But that's a fabulous experience to be able to call on, because that's it right there. What you described. Okay. So you're meditating outside, the dogs and the squirrels are doing their thing. And, you know, that brings up the irritation and all that. And then you bring the attention back to where you want it to be. And that's what you want. I mean, that is to me, that is the thing that we learn we want to do, because that takes such good care of Dixie. That is the kindest way for her to live. And so over time, in my experience with that radical acceptance, okay, this is how it is. You know, he's this way. The reactions in me are this, you know, the whole thing goes round and round. With the acceptance of all of that starts to become the space that you're describing of the ability to bring the attention back to where I want it to be. And ultimately, that is the kindest, most loving thing we could do for her, for ourselves.
Yeah, and one other thing I was trying was to put the focus on me with what I want. And so there's coffee drips all down the stairs, and I noticed that. And it's like, okay, well, I'm going to clean that up. And look, doesn't this look beautiful now? And just try to be happy about that.
Exactly.
I can fix things, like, for the most part, or just throw the towels away, or, you know.
I mean, get into a full-time conversation of, wow, I have a sponge. I have the willingness to do it. I have an able body. I can move around. I have stairs. I have a house with stairs in them. I mean, just get yourself in a full-time conversation of, oh my gosh, all that, you know, working and what I love about this situation. And yeah, it's another fabulous directing attention technique. So yeah, please, you know, keep us posted. Because I think, as I say, I think we all have our version of what you're describing.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Gosh,
all right.
Thank you.
Dixie.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for joining us, Dixie. And Jen, I was going to the same place that you just mentioned about the unconditional self-acceptance. And I was thinking of the CD set that Sherry did a long time ago, the 6 CD. Unconditional self-acceptance, and it's fabulous.
That is fabulous, Michael. Yeah, I don't know if that's still available, so I won't say a lot about it, but yes, that was amazing.
Yes.
But again, it's just the title itself takes you right there, right? Radical self-acceptance.
Yes, it does.
Nothing's left. Nothing. One of my favorite Sherry Huber quotes is, let's see if I can get it, all that's required of us is to accept that which is completely unacceptable to us. And when I hear her talk about it, she often underlines that piece, to us. The thing that to me is completely unacceptable. That's my doorway to freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah, the thing that, and I know you talk about it as what the portal is now. The portal is whatever's right in front of me right now.
Exactly.
And, because my first reaction, of course, is this is not the portal. If all this could just go away right now, I'd be really happy. But your point and Sherry's point is, no, this is the portal. And if I can seize the willingness to be open to that, then there's a lot of possibility there.
Yeah, huge possibility. Yep.
And Jen, it's time for Good News Update, and I'm going to bring your guest on here.
Oh, great.
And you are all set to go.
All right. I'm so pleased to be joined this afternoon by Sequoia, who is here to speak with us about her experience of being one of the stewards for virtual meditation groups. Welcome, Sequoia.
Thanks, Jen. Good afternoon. Hi.
Good afternoon. Thanks so much for being here.
Well, my pleasure. This is great.
So virtual meditation groups, being the opportunity to sit with Sangha virtually, schedule on the website, and I know you are one of the folks that allows that to happen.
That is so, yes. Now I'm going to lose my voice here suddenly. Yes. you know, when it was, it came to me that I was going to be on Good News, you know how the mind goes, you know, wants to take over about, well, what is, you know the whole thing.
What am I going to say?
What am I going to say? Yeah, exactly. What am I going to say?
Right.
And this is such, this is practice here in action. I you know, it dropped in that that was nothing that I needed to worry about, that life would take care of it.
Wow.
And I just remember, you know, just standing there and having it just drop in with such clarity, the meditation group. And it was just absolutely, oh, I just had got this big smile on my face, mm-hmm. just knowing that that was it to bring today to the call. And
I'm going to restrain myself. Go ahead, Sequoia.
Okay. And so I started looking at a little bit deeper the role of the guide or the meditation guide for virtual meditation. And I saw immediately that conditioned mind was there discounting it, that it really wasn't worth talking about on open air, because it was really insignificant. That I needed to, you know, talk about something more important, like, I don't know, I needed to write a book or, you know, something big. Sorry. And then I saw, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm just saying, right.
Okay. Yeah. And then I saw, of course, there is absolutely nothing for ego in this. It's everything for the heart. And guiding the sit and attending the sit. It's done in the privileged environment. We have no idea who we're sitting with. Mm-hmm. We have no idea who's guiding the sit.
Mm-hmm.
It's just showing up out of the love of sitting together and sitting with Sangha.
I mean, it's just so beautiful, everything about it, Sequoia. So first of all, that piece of, oh, I don't have to worry about that. Life is going to take care of that. And then it just drops in. And I love the image of looking to see. So ego says, I mean, what? That's so insignificant. I mean, you have to talk about something big. I just had this sense of, well, but I mean, it was life's idea. So I'm sure life has something to say about it. Right? So you look to see.
Yes.
You see the
exactly.
Of course, because there's nothing for ego in this. This is just showing up. And truly, I mean, it really is an extraordinary privileged environment kind of a thing, isn't it? No voices. We don't hear anyone's voice. We have no idea how many people, who's on it. We don't know who's guiding it. We all just show up and sit together.
Absolutely. It is such a just a beautiful and generous, one of the many generous practice tools that we have. But the fact that we have an opportunity to sit with Sangha once or twice a day, every day of the week, I don't even know how to put words to it, but it is. It's life-changing, and there's something about just making the commitment to do it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely my experience. Yeah. I mean, in the times where I've not had the privilege of sitting with other Sangha in person, the virtual meditation, it's completely different. It's completely different being with Sangha in that way than it is sitting on my own. And it's so fun. It's just dialing, you know, quote, just dialing in, and there we are together. It just, I don't know, it's very profound.
It is very profound. And there's an accountability to it that, you know, is just different than sitting down on alone. And, you know, I live in California, so it's kind of, you know, some woo-woo stuff. But just, you know, I can't see the folks, but just the coming together, knowing that there are folks I'm practicing with, and we're sitting together in that moment.
Yeah. And, you know, Sequoia, in the times where I've been guiding, as you're saying, you know, setting it all up, there really is that sense of providing it, of wanting to do this because anyone who wants to can dial in. And when I've been on the other end dialing in, there's a sense of someone's providing this. I really want to show up and be part of that.
Uh-huh.
And
yes,
in that way.
Yeah, I often think of Sherry telling the story about, you know, sitting in Mountain View, just holding the space for the meditation, and not knowing if anybody was going to show up. And it just feels like a carrying on of a tradition.
Yeah.
To just provide the space for people to sit and to hold the privileged environment, which is so it's a treasure.
Yeah, it really is. And it's another place where stewards get to both offer practice and receive practice by offering practice, right? To step up and say, you know, there's no way that we'd be able to have this program without the stewards back there doing it, because, you know, the few people who are doing things couldn't show up all the time. As you say, I think there's certainly on the Pacific Coast, there's a meditation every single day of the week. And, and of course, the people on the East Coast can dial into those. So, yeah, the East Coasters really have it good, don't they? Because they have
David.
They can
dial into
both of them. I suppose people who wake up at 4 in the morning on the Pacific Coast could have two as well, but, yeah.
yeah, exactly. The early risers here on the West Coast could hop on really early. And, and I was just thinking, too, that you have to have taken precepts in order to be a virtual meditation guide, and that that opportunity is coming up for people this summer, in the summer of Sangha.
And so
that will become an opportunity for more folks.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, that's very exciting. It's been some time since we've been able to offer precepts, so very fun that will be happening again this summer.
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Well, Sequoia, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon, and I just love that whole process, the way you describe it. I'm going to take that on. That sense of, okay, right, I'm on good news, and the immediate reaction is turn to conditioned mind, what do I do, and to realize, no, I don't need to do that. Life has got this. And just, I'll be here, life. You just let me know what what you want to look at.
Yeah. Yes, it's so freeing.
Yeah, it is. So relaxing.
Yeah. Very relaxing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jen. Thank you for this opportunity.
Yeah, thanks for being with us today.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Sequoia, and thank you, Jen. And Jen, I love that conversation, and I got the sense that with the virtual meditation, since I don't see any of the other participants or the guide, or it's really the power is in my intention to show up and participate. And it seems like that's kind of what you were pointing at as you two were talking.
Yes, exactly, Michael. And you, as you were saying that, you reminded me of something that dropped in when Sequoia was first describing her whole experience. Is it's so perfect because, of course, it's in meditation that is the training for the process she describes of, oh, I don't have to turn to conditioned mind for this. Life is God. That's literally what the training of meditation allows us to do, is to see that process going on, to let it go, and to have the space. It's kind of what we were talking about with Dixie, too, to direct the attention to where I want it to be, and there, life has access to me to drop in the information.
Yeah, it's genius. Yeah, I train in meditation, in sitting meditation, and then it becomes available to me in the rest of my life.
Yep. Indeed.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And we have another caller here, Jen.
All right, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Michael and Janet. It's Janice. in Victoria.
Hey, Jana.
Hey, Jana.
Hi. Well, thanks for taking my call, because I wanted to follow up about the questions that people might have about coming to SQIM, and did we want, you know, from the survey that went out. Okay, so for people who didn't know, like, do we want a kind of a more residential permanent type of place, or how would it work? And so I have some questions. And I wanted to say, first of all, that I went for a month last year and stayed at an Airbnb and traveled, you know, just each day to the 4 acres where we had a tent to be under.
Uh-huh.
And I found it great. I really found it. I mean, it was a different experience, but I just found it wonderful to be able to have an extended period of time. And I don't know exactly, but because I participated in many retreats at the Zen Monastery Peace Center in Murfrees, but also I would go to the Christmas ones at, or the New Year's one at Menlo Park, and I went once to Bethlehem and once to Carmel, that I did have the experience of being together on residential retreats. So I don't know if it was easier to just settle right in because I'd already had that experience or not. But for me, it was really wonderful.
Good. Excellent.
And I'd had chances to be, I guess, 3 times in Murphy's to be there for a month as a visiting monk. And so I do like those extended times. So when this came up, like even just to practice, not thinking about the survey, but when it came up that we were going to practice and it was organized differently, so it was either weekend type of retreats or week-long retreats, I just picked one right away. I didn't want to miss it. But I was also very conscious that there was an eagerness to want to sign up for more than one, but I really wanted everybody to have that opportunity. So I picked 1 week where I can come. And so in my mind, I thought it would be filling up really, really fast. So then I thought, oh, I don't know what's happening. There's this survey, so I have no idea. But I want to put a plug in that it's kind of a lovely middle way to be able to be in the world, to go home in the evening and hold the space for myself and come back in the day. And we have so many brilliant opportunities, actually, to participate, you know, virtually. And I think that's given our Sangha just incredible strength, so that when we show up, we kind of know how to be, because we're already holding the privilege and environment and in workshops and online and reflective listening bodies.
I think that is very, very true. Yeah. So even people who are maybe coming to an in-person event for the first time already have a sense of it, because, you know, very often they've practiced with us for quite a while virtually. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, so this is a question I've always wanted to ask and explore. So it's almost as if it's a little bit taboo, but that's only for me. I feel like I don't say a lot about this practice, because I was really aware and conscious that too much can be said, and, you know, leaving retreats and going back and being super enthusiastic. So I've just been trying, I think all along, just like how I am holds the practice, and if somebody wants to ask more. But I've always been like freely have a library of books for people, and they can borrow them. And there is a fear, Jen, about how to be if a friend decides that they want to do it. And would I lose the friendship because I can't talk about it? So it's a really interesting thing because, in fact, over the many years I've practiced, two friends are really dedicated to this practice. But we no longer live in the same city. It doesn't come up. We don't discuss it in this way. It's almost like, what if there are people here and I can't kind of be their friend? Like it's a really strange thing. So I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
I think so. So there's one little piece I'm not sure if I'm tracking, so let me see if I'm with you. So you realize that, you know, you say very little about the practice. I mean, partly that we're all given that suggestion because that encouragement, because, I mean, it's not really something you can talk about, right? It's an experience you can have, but it's very, very tricky. I mean, we can all barely pull it off. We all the time on morning shows, you hear us saying, like, well, I mean, it's hard to say because we're trying to talk about things that are very, very tricky to talk about because they're such profound sort of, you know, not on a normal conditioned verbal level. So there's that. But as you say, you know, you have a whole library of books and you are practice. I mean, people watch you transform. And so if someone really pursues it and seems to really, you know, want to understand for themselves what's going on with Janice? Why is she so lit up? Then, you know, you offer them to read a book or send them to the website or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so maybe sometimes you hold yourself back from offering that kind of thing because there's a conversation in your head of, gosh, what if this person really took to it? And would I lose this friendship if they started to become part of Sangha?
Yeah, it's a bit of like even if they didn't choose to become part of Sangha, people start asking a lot of questions. How does this compare to that and some other thing that they might be doing? And I don't feel I'm the person to answer all those, so I do redirect to the books and things, the open air, if somebody wants to do that. But there is, I don't know what it is. It's like... it's almost like I'm a little bit protective of the practice as well. Because I know I have seen people who are the kind of like meditation shoppers. They kind of do a circuit and then come around and then they're gone and then they come around. And I don't need to really judge that.
No.
Go ahead.
You also don't need to sort of pre-weed them out, if you will, because they'll weed themselves in a big experience. You know, I think it's the thing, this came up recently too, right, somewhere in some context where Sherry was talking about that comment that someone made to her years ago when she was describing how this is and the privileged environment and how, you know, how much that's a foundation of what we do. And the comment was, oh, that's interesting. I imagine that you'll always have a small and very mature Sangha. So certain kind of person who's drawn to this deep level of practice. And as you say, it's not good or bad or right or wrong. It's just the way it is. And so if someone starts to, you know, really take to Sherry's books and starts to pursue it and starts to, you know, call into radio shows, if they find that that's not the level of practice they're looking for, they'll weed themselves out, in my experience.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Yeah, and there's this little defensiveness as somebody, you know, mention something or they don't like something about practice or, you know, I feel like, I don't need to really say anything because I love practice.
Exactly. And they're having their experience and we can know that their experience is unfolding perfectly for them just as it needs to. So it really, in a way, it really all kind of works itself out, especially because it's one of those I would project, it hasn't happened so far. It sounds like that someone in your immediate environment has started to really, you know, get very involved in practice. And so it might be one of those, well, that'll be interesting to see. If that happens, I'll have that workshop and see how that all unfolds.
Right. Oh, good point. Thank you for the direction. Okay. That's great. I'm very happy about all the things we do virtually. That yoga is coming up for the African Vulnerable Children's Project, and a workshop about taboos. I mean, it's pretty nonstop. We're so lucky.
Pretty nonstop. And we look forward to seeing you soon when you're here.
Yeah, see you soon.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Janice. And Jen, we have another caller here.
Okay, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Beth.
Hey, Beth.
Okay, major deer in the headlights.
Major deer in the headlights.
Completely
right.
Shocked.
I was going to say, so what's going on? And that's what's going on. Deer in the headlights.
I am incredibly grateful to have had practice for all these years.
Amen.
Because without it,
we won't
anywhere close to where I'm at.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I remember Sherry saying once that, all you can do at some points is just survive.
Yep.
And with having the practice under my belt and not in a place of discussion, practice happens. It's available to me.
Yeah.
During major upheaval.
Yeah. What a good point, Beth. What a good point. It really, it's why the image is like, training a muscle, is so perfect. Because so you weight train, and then you're out, it was a terrible image that dropped in, but, something catches on fire and you're part of the rescue, you're able to lift that dog up.
You're able to do it.
Out of the house because your muscles are ready for it.
Yes, I remember, I think it was Anne at the monastery saying that, I'm walking this hill so that I can walk this hill.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And so you practice, and then something big hits you. And it can even feel, I don't know if this is part of what you're saying, Beth, so this might just be my experience, but in the middle of it, it can even feel like I'm in survival. But especially as you start to come through it, you realize practice was really happening through that whole thing.
I had a really rough morning, just really caught. And no awareness that I was caught to the point where I just had to lay down. I just couldn't face the day. And then realizing I'm caught.
Yes.
And then I can look at the whole thing in a whole different light.
I mean, that is absolutely enormous to be able to see that in the, that's a miracle.
Yeah, but it's been like, you're caught. I mean, there's just no awareness that you're caught. This is just the reality, and it sucks.
Exactly. And I hate it, and I just change it, like Dixie was saying. Just change him. Just make him be different. Circumstances be different. But even the lying down, Beth, right? I mean, that is such a – something was intervening on your behalf there, right? You just laid down.
Thank you for that. The voices were saying you're lazy.
And it's
but
so not
it
true.
Wasn't true.
It interrupted it. It allowed that space, like Boy was talking about, that space that comes in. And then, that's awareness. Now you're available to it.
Oh. So more than anything, I just thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Because I am drawn to the deep work.
Yes, clearly. And I don't know if it's available to you, Beth, but to see how, and we say this, or at least on open air all the time, to see how everyone's practice creates practice for all of us. So, you have that profound sense of gratitude of all these years of practicing and practice being available. And to realize that your willingness to practice over all of those years makes that available to everyone else.
And it actually has makes it so that I have something to offer.
Yes, exactly.
That I have a way of being of service.
Well put. Yeah. That doing your own practice is truly a service to all. So, you know, it's so
thank you,
perfect, Jen. Right? To thank you. And you have a morning like you have. And it, as you say, in the middle of it, it feels terrible. This stinks. I hate it. I want it to change. You come through it. And not only is it all right, not only do you survive it, but there's such a level of freedom on the other side of it. You call into the radio show, you talk about that, that has this enormous ripple effect, and you realize, okay, so that is, those really terrible, quote, terrible times are that, you know, all those images we use, the rock tumbler, or the, you know, the karma burned away, or it's just how it works.
It's just how it works. And since I'm not here to be comfortable, but I'm here to burn karma, that's what I want.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. That's
I just forget sometimes.
Me too. Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
Thanks, Beth.
Thank you.
Take
again and yet again.
Again and yet again. Go happy.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Beth. And that was genius, Jen. You said that everyone's practice creates practice for all of us.
Yeah, and you know, Michael, it reminds me of the most recent history postcard that went out.
Uh-huh, yes, I love this.
Oh my gosh, isn't that it is so much fun? So 30 plus years ago, there's Sangha sitting in a room, like we've been talking about today, you know, just a handful of people talking about what they're seeing. And then decades later, we're reading that in There Is Nothing Wrong With You, the book, Transforming Lives. Thousands and thousands of lives. From those things that people just in their everyday life, here's what's going on, here's what they're seeing. They bring it to the guide. The guide is having these huge awarenesses about, you know, what that, the work of going beyond self-hate, it gets written down in a book. I mean, yeah. Really, everyone's practice creates practice.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah,
yeah, and I'm the beneficiary. Amazing.
Mm.
And we have another caller, Jen.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Ramita in Charleston.
Hey, Ramita.
Hello. I'd like to I'd like to talk about my experience of working with the experience of working with the recording of the Mentor to the Rescue workshop.
Fabulous.
I signed up for it and then got completely distracted and missed it, and got the recording of it when I heard Sherry talking about it on the year-long, and it inspired me to ask for it and to do that practice she suggested of listening to it once a week. So I received it and listened to it on Sunday. And practiced a little bit with one of the tasks I've been suffering over. It's been, conditioning has talked me out of it repeatedly, is to learn how to download an audio clip, say, of open air, and edit out a chunk of it to be listened to repeatedly on my recording device. Mm-hmm. So that's what I worked with in the workshop, and had some interesting success, and continued with the process of I need to do more of this. And then I got a perfect example, a perfect opportunity today. I've been dreading getting a hold of customer service to help me with airline reservations that have been completely jumbled and problematic. And I put down my earbuds in, talked to the mentor about the fears, the resistance, the what I anticipated happening, you know, with the money and the time and aggravation, and got really nice clarity and patience and spaciousness from the mentor, saying, you don't have to fix anything here. All you have to do is be present. And it sort of cleared away the field. And I've got to tell you, Jen, I spent 4 hours in a chat room with an agent going through all of this stuff, and all I felt was gratitude. Like, I could not do this, and I just kept thanking them, and they kept working on it, and took a break for lunch and had to go back and do more of it because it's still... the wrong date had been chosen. You know, we got everything straightened out, and it turns out instead of a flight in June, it was dated in July, and I had to go back in there, get another agent. But I had the earbuds in. I was recording. I'd feel the tension coming up in the body, and then I'd talk about it, and then the suffering would dissipate, and all that was left was gratitude. And it just was miraculous.
So good. Really, Jen. I mean, it's so funny because the way you describe it, with that, like, then the date, you know, you get it all worked out. It says, you know, you just can feel that, like, we're all about to just have this big sigh of relief, like, wow, well done, team. And then the date is July. And there's just a sense of, like, wow, life really loves me. Right? Because you're having this extraordinary workshop with this. And it's like, there's more, Ramita. There's more here. You can go deeper with this acceptance. It's even better than that. Right? So there's a whole sound of it. I just love it.
Yeah, wow. It is such a graphic illustration of the power of having the mentor with me. You know, I could hear what ego was telling me about what was wrong with me. It was primarily me, and that's usually what translates into, you know, frustration is the most mild word I can think of to describe the kinds of feelings of lack of control, and it's not going the way I want it. And it comes down to what conditioning is telling me is my own inadequacy. Yeah. And, you know, to be able to see that and own it, this is my process. This is not what's going on out there. Mm-hmm. And it's reinforced the desire to do this weekly because I know so well I will forget. I will say, no, mentor, don't worry, I can do this on my own. And get into this conundrum again. So,
Well, and your description of it, really, it's so clear why it feels like I hate this. I hate everything about this. And it seems so, you know, we'll all agree, right? I mean, being in with customer service for 4 hours, I mean, no, that's terrible. That's a waste of time. You know, I could be doing something else. It's so frustrating. You know, a million reasons why this shouldn't be this way, you know, incompetent, you know, all the things. But by really paying attention and looking at it, what you see is what's making this so horrible is basically conditioning's filter. You're inadequate, you know, I mean, just all the conditioned messages. And that's what's terrible, because what you did was you completely shifted the attention gratitude, patience, acceptance. You're just here with it. And that's all we want. We just want to be here, I project. We just want to be here with our lives. And so when normally when you're on with customer service, that's not where you should be. That's something you just got to finish so that you can get back to your life. You know, so every second you're on with customer service, you hate it because that's not where you should be. It's not here. But in this case, every moment that you were there, you were actually there for it. You were just here in this moment. And what happened to be happening in that moment was you were working with customer service on a plane ticket. Well, that's as good a thing to be doing as anything else.
Yes. And just amazement and gratitude, echoing what others have been saying, you know, just without practice and without self-hate getting in there to block this potential for clarity.
Yes.
And then the suffering just dissipates. It just doesn't get the foothold.
That's another huge thing that's been coming up a lot lately is if we don't go to the self-hate, which mm-hmm. is always right there ready, right? And in whatever form, like, oh my God, why didn't this work out, the plane ticket work out from the start? Or why are you irritated? I mean, you shouldn't be irritated. I mean, why?
Right.
If we don't go to that self-hate, it leaves an opening for that clarity that you're describing. And that completely, and basically the clarity is, oh, I don't need to change anything. I just want to be here with it. Just mm-hmm. be here. That's mm-hmm. the clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know we're at the top of the hour, a little past, so thanks so much for being here, and I look mm-hmm. forward to seeing you this summer.
Excellent. Thanks, Ramita.
So happy.
So happy.
Thanks for joining us, Ramita. And Jen, I am re-inspired to work with customer service now after that conversation. New spine, new energy, motivation.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Mike.
Yes. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, everyone. We are at the top of the hour. And go happy.
All right. Go happy. Bye-bye.
Bye.